You're listening to Scarves Around the Funnel, brought to you in association with Forest Hepburn and McDonald's Signs.
Getting noticed isn't always easy, because there's so much noise.
But at Forest Hepburn and McDonald's, we make it easy. With standout signs, business cards, shop fronts, banners, leaflets, vehicle graphics, the lot. Showcasing your products, advertising your brand, and getting business noticed. So, what can we do for you? Forest Hepburn and McDonald's, creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. Visit fhmcdsigns.co.uk.
Kingsley rolls to the boys. Back to Kingsley. Curls it twice. Lovely effort.
2-0!
No! Kingsley magic!
Hello and welcome to Scarves Around the Funnel, the podcast dedicated to Heart of Midlothian Football Club, who were back in action on Easter weekend. We witnessed the cross from Shankland. The Hearts fans were risen from their seats to celebrate Vargas's header, but a Good Friday turned into a fairly average Saturday when Marley Watkins left Hearts with egg on their faces with a fine strike in the second half. I am Laurie Dunsire, joined on what is at the time of recording Sir Paul Hartley Day, I believe is what they call it down Gorgie Way. 18 years since that famous day in April in 2006 when Paul Hartley put the Hibbies to the sword. How are you doing, Mark Donaldson? What do you remember of that day?
Oh, I remember it well. I remember commentating on the game, and I watched it this morning. And do you know what? At the time, I thought Zibi Malkovski had palmed the ball into his own net, that free kick from Paul Hartley for his second goal. And looking back at it, it looks like the ball's actually over the line before Malkovski gets something on it. But I was actually thinking when I watched his first goal, have we had a player since Paul Hartley in that game who's made that type of run? Basically thought, fuck it, I'm going, I'm chasing, I need the perfect ball back, but I want to try and score. Have we had someone that would break the run and get beyond the final defender or get in front of the final defender? Because that was so refreshing to see that. What a player. What a day that was to set us up for the cup final.
I don't think they really make them like that anymore, do they?
Don't think so.
Doesn't really fit with modern tactics. The kind of the box-to-box midfielder who really actually does almost go box-to-box and makes that run in behind. I mean, you see players going ahead of the strikers and strikers dropping deep, but not in, not in that way, not to say exclusively, but it's certainly not as common these days.
I know Scott likes to talk about sixes and eights and tens. He was basically all three of those in one. He was a brilliant player for us. He really was.
He certainly was. Scott McIntosh, it's been 18 years, an adult. If someone was born on that day, they would now be
eligible to drink.
They'd be drinking. Does that make you feel old, Scott McIntosh?
Oof. It does, aye. My memories of the day are a little bit different. I'd many months before the season had even started, I'd agreed to go down to London for the weekend to see Depeche Mode. So I actually had to watch the game with various other members of the London Hearts crowd in the Free Kings pub on that Sunday. But the good thing is, I did win over £300 because I had a fiver on Hearts to win 4-0.
Really?
Yes, and that was the second time that year. That season, I won over £300 putting money on Hearts to beat Hibs 4-0.
Were there any Hibs fans in the pub?
Not that I recall, no.
Which is the wrong answer. You should have said, yes, there were. And I said, did they enjoy the silence? Because you were down there to see Depeche Mode.
Sorry for not setting you up for
that. All right, that's fine. That's why we don't script things. Dunsar, do you even know who Depeche Mode are, you young thing?
I certainly do, yes. I mean, it's not a band that I would automatically pick to listen to, but I know who they are, and I guess one of the songs I do quite like from Depeche Mode is pretty ruined often by Celtic.
Yes.
Yeah, I boo that whenever they play it live.
It annoys me that I kind of like that song, but now when I hear it, it's like, and you start humming it, I just picture Celtic fans bouncing in the away end of Tynecastle. Spoiled it.
You know how I sometimes go off on a tangent? I think this is a good time for future homework, maybe not next week. Is there one song above any others that you would associate with Hearts? Because this week we've got players signed by Hearts from Scottish clubs. Just while you're talking about that, and it was a song that Scott liked, now it's associated with another team. And concurrently as well, is there a song that's ruined for you because it's associated with someone else? Just a thought for potential homework down the line. Because Carnival de Paris after 1998 was forever associated with...
There's a few associated with us that I really don't like. Like just songs that were played quite a bit back in the day. So we had a good few seasons where we kept on playing Lulu every time we scored. Hated that. I just hated that. And then
blame Mark McKenzie for that, I think.
Late 90s, before the game would start, we always played that Coco Jumbo song, and it was horrendous. A really bad sort of summer track. I'll try and think he's something a bit more positive by next week.
And you know what Scott Wilson is going to say here, because he listens and he'll be out on his jog or his park run or whatever, and happy birthday belatedly again to Scotty, Duel by Propaganda. It wasn't really ruined for the majority of Hearts supporters because it was played so early. It was the first song that he played after he got all his setup done. That there was hardly anybody in the stadium as far as fans are concerned, but the media were. Yeah, Duel by Propaganda. There's a song that was ruined by Scott. For the media.
I mean, there's lots that I think of in a good way, and I do still, you know, the Leveller is a What a Beautiful Day. I like that at the end of a game, yes. One, and that's one that always takes me back in particular to when we're talking about Sir Paul Hartley Day, to that season, especially 05-06. Lots of sunny days when we were doing well, and at the end of the game, you know, we just, you know, at the start of that season, especially, you know, putting four goals past Hibs, beating Rangers, games like that. The end of it, some was out and Levelers were playing at the end of the game. I'm trying to think, you often associate the whatever music they play when the trophy gets awarded as well.
Yeah.
Or the full time, because I think in, you talked about Carnival de Paris, then there was, it was Daft Punk, wasn't it, in 2006?
Yeah.
Just about to ask that, is that the one it was? Yep.
Yeah. One
More Time is what they played. And then 2012 is obviously one that we still use quite a bit and lots of teams do, which is Avicii Levels, but 2013 against St Mirren had a bit of an impact in that for me because they played it with St Mirren but the League Cup against us as well. So that took a bit of a gloss off of that one. But yeah, I think we've done something similar previously. But yeah, happy to
we're revisit. On, what's this, episode 290? That's quite an achievement. So I think we're due to maybe revisit one or two because there'll be new listeners all the time.
Oh yeah, we have. Sometimes we probably revisit them with realizing. But we will talk this week about Hearts against Kilmarnock, which took place at the weekend at Tynecastle on Big Hearts Day. We will talk about, as Mark briefly mentioned there, Hearts signing players from other Scottish clubs. It was a bit of a challenge on Twitter, people understanding the homework, so I should probably word it correctly. So the kind of best and worst players that Hearts have signed from other Scottish clubs. Subject that just came up when we were talking about the recent free contract deals that Hearts are looking at in terms of signing players from Ross County, from Motherwell, from Livingston. And we will also look ahead to Hearts game this coming Saturday, away to St Mirren. You're listening to Scarves Around the Funnel, sponsored by Forrest Hepburn and McDonald Signs, creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. First up, Heart of Midlothian hosting Kilmarnock, back in action after the international break on Big Hearts Day. Just to mention that, first off, that was a fantastic effort from Big Hearts and everyone associated with them again. I understand the time of recording. I know they were looking to make 30,000. They are still taking donations. There's still an auction of the kit. It looks like they were already over 21,000, which is a, a terrific figure. You can still donate going onto the Big Hearts website, bighearts.org. Please do so if you can. And yeah, well done to everyone for making it another big day for the Hearts charity. In terms of the football, Hearts made four changes from the side that lost to Ross County a fortnight prior. In came Dexter Lembekisa, Frankie Kent, George Grant and Macaulay Tate for his first ever senior start. Outgoing Atkinson, Sibbick, Rolls and Denham. Hearts come with a 4-2-3-1 formation. Xander Clark in goals, Lembekisa right, Cochrane left. Kingsley alongside Frankie Kent, returning from injury for the first time in 1 month or so. Benny Beningame alongside 18-year-old Macaulay Tate. Kenneth Vargas, who of course just signed that 5-year deal in the attacking three with Forrest on the left, Grant in the number 10 role, and Lawrence Shanklin, who got 3 goals against Kilmarnock last season, leading the line. Mark, in terms of the team, we chatted about it a little bit before the game on WhatsApp, and it was one of those, I think, a few eyebrows raised with Macaulay Tate getting a start. Of course, a teenager getting his first appearance in the senior side from the start. But all in all, I think we were in agreement that we liked the look of the team, didn't we?
Yeah. Yeah, certainly did. I wasn't sure prior to kickoff and the team being announced what it would be, just simply because you don't know how players have come back from international duties. Some have travelled a fair distance. Who'd be getting a rest? Who was tired? Who's ready to go? You've got to remember as well that during the international break, those that stayed back will have worked on things for this Kilmarnock game. So I don't think it was any surprise to see probably the majority of the team were those that didn't go away with their country. The main thing for me was seeing Frankie Kent back. That was huge.
Yeah, terrific to see Kent back in the heart of the defence. For you, Scott, what do you think of the team? And Macaulay Tate's inclusion, for all of it being maybe a little bit of a surprise for many and for all of his inexperience, it made a lot of sense, didn't it, to have him in?
It does make a lot of sense. I think with the sort of current continued absence of Neuenhoff, I think it was probably only a matter of time before Macaulay Tate got a shout, because I think it's fair to say so far that both Cammy Devlin and Aidan Denham have been unable to transition into the sort of midfielder that Stephen Naismith wants from them. I think he's definitely looking for some of his central midfielders to be able to play in a more advanced roles, sort of try and make runs beyond the front men, sort of get into pockets of space. And I don't think we've really seen that from Devlin and Denham up to this point. So when you look at it that way, I think it was only going to be a matter of time before Tate got his chance. And when I saw how Killy were lining up, I was really confident that we were going to get a result, because they were clearly going for the win. They were setting up pretty much 4-4-2, flat back four with their four centre halves, and then, you know, they had Donnelly and Polworth in the centre of midfield, which, you know, there's no real sort of bite in that midfield. They had Watson and Mbada on the bench, who have been two of their most consistent performers this season. So when I saw the two lineups, I was quite confident that Grant especially would maybe be able to, you know, find pockets of space in front of their back four. And, you know, first 10-15 minutes, that definitely seemed to be the case.
Yeah, it was a decent first half for Hearts. I thought the opening few minutes were maybe fairly even. Killy certainly looked like they were going to try and force the issue on the counter, especially down the left-hand side. We'll get to that maybe a bit more. But Hearts, I felt, got a grip of this game. And in the 10th minute, Cochrane found a bit of space coming in from the left-hand side into the middle of the park. Put a ball into the box, found Shanklin at the back post, and he plays a lovely measured cross, hung up to the other side of the goal, and there's Kenneth Vargas to nod in, almost on the line, to celebrate that new deal with a goal. And Mark, it was a first half where, you know, I was pretty pleased. I think at the end of it, Armstrong sent a cross in from the right, and Marley Watkins probably should have scored. It's a great save by Xander Clark, but on the whole, I felt like, certainly for maybe half an hour of this, Hearts felt like they'd got on top, they'd got that goal. You know, we always worry about it, Hearts maybe not getting started properly, not getting ahead. But they felt like they had a good grip of this game, didn't they?
It was like it was a role reversal. Normally this season we've been excellent in the second half. I thought we started and came out the blocks really good, really quickly. And I think half hour is a good shout. I said I really enjoyed the first half performance. Yeah, when you're playing four at the back, Scotty has gone into detail about this before and how you're going to be a little bit more open than if you play three at the back, but it does allow you, hopefully, to have more chances. And yeah, I thought for probably the first half hour, we played at a tempo that I really liked. We were getting in faces and stopping them having time on the ball. But they made a slight change, and that change prevented us from passing out from the back as easily as we had been doing. And we didn't really have an answer for that, especially in the second half. But for the first half hour, yeah, I thought the save from Xander Clark was outstanding on just before half time. But yeah, a better team goes in ahead of us. But this is the league that we're in. This is the teams that we're playing. Celtic or Rangers would probably have led at half time. Instead, in this instance, it was Hearts that went in 1-0 up.
Different story second half, though. Scott, what was it that really changed in this second period that led to Kilmarnock coming back into the game and having the better of things in the second 45?
Yeah, so I think there's two changes that happen either side of half-time. So I think what Kilmarnock were trying to do for the first sort of maybe first quarter of the game was press with their sort of front four. But what that was allowing was it was giving Beningame quite a lot of space in the middle of the park. So therefore, we're sort of pushing back on our back four because we were trying to play from the back, basically, from our goal kicks. But Beningame was finding quite a lot of space in the middle of the park. And because Bacolli Tate was making quite a lot of, you know, very good runs in a more advanced position, I think Polworth and Donnelly were struggling, and I think what McInnes done was he sort of tweaked it so that one of them decided to press as part of a five rather than a four. So you could see that Kilmarnock were already starting to get more of a foothold on the game as the first half wore on. And then what happened in the second half, which was a bit more down to luck rather than a tactical change from McInnes, was that, I'm trying to remember, I'm pretty sure it's Polworth that gets injured, maybe about 5-10 minutes into the second half. And what that allows is for Kilmarnock to make that change and put Watson in there. And between those two things happening, you saw Beningame and Tate seeing less and less of the game. Tate especially was then starting to get a bit leggy. And Kilmarnock at that stage were really in the ascendancy for the remainder of the game.
It was David Watson who came on for Donnelly 9 minutes into the second half, and he was the only player who had actually dropped out from that St Mirren game. I have to say, I'm always really impressed when I see young David Watson, still only 19 himself, you know, see a positive for Scottish football. You've got two teenagers on there in the midfield, both looking very promising. Obviously Watson slightly more established than Tate at this stage. In terms of areas of, I guess, concern from a Hearts point of view, there is one mark that we kind of have to talk about, and we're well aware of it. It's in the right back position, and it's a bit of a conundrum for Hearts, isn't it? Because I would say most of us feel that we want to see Hearts play with a four at the back, a 4-2-3-1, a 4-3-3. I think that's generally the preference when we've spoken, when I've spoken to other Hearts fans. I think one of the challenges is, you know, and in particular for Stephen Naismith being the man picking the team, is how do you play that four and get a reliable person playing on the right side, because we've really struggled there. And now Dexter Lembekisa is young. You know, I'm not going to criticise him too much. He's shown a lot going forward. There's a lot of promise about him as a player, but he's a young player. And I think it was evident, even in the first half when I thought Hearts were decent, Killie were focusing down that side, weren't they? They've got a great player in Armstrong on the right, but Matty Kennedy was getting so much of the ball. I think that was a conscious effort on them to try and expose Dexter Lembekisa.
Of course, as they should. That's the ploy. First thing you do if you're an opposition manager when looking at the team you're about to play is find out their weaknesses. And that's Hart's biggest weakness. How do we fix it? I don't know is the answer. Right now it's a toss-up. It's who's the best of the worst. And it's sad that we're in that predicament. But let's not forget where we are right now. If we can finish third comfortably and get a decent right back, Stephen Naismith, with an interview to Barry Anderson today in the evening news, saying that no, the three players that they've added, that will not be it. There will be more coming in. And no doubt a right back will be one of those. Dexter Lembekisa will go back down to, is it Wolves? I think he's up from.
Yes.
What are our options? Because did I read somewhere that
Michael Smith's, I think they do have an option for an additional year at Yeovil Town for Michael Smith.
With those that, well, Walter Kidd, I mean, let's not stop there. Did I read Robin? Somewhere? Didn't talk much about Hearts, funnily enough. Well, we did, but did I read somewhere that Aidan Denham has played as a right back slash right wing back? there was one Hearts youngster
in that position at training,
right?
From what I've
did he play for the 21s or the Scotland underage group as a right back or a right wing back?
Not too sure. Did he come on? Yeah, he might have come on in a game and actually played a few minutes there. But I know he's trained in that position a few times at Hearts.
Why not try it? Why not try it out? And the reason I say now is because two things. One, we should now be looking ahead, as well as focusing on securing third spot sooner rather than later. But we want to go into the Rangers game with momentum. So you're not throwing someone in at right back or right wing back that you've not played in a game before there in that game at Hampden. And the other thing would be play Craig Gordon against Livingston, because you want to go in with momentum. You don't want to throw someone in. Craig's shown he's okay with playing one-off games and he's just as good. But let's think ahead to this. We're not weakening the side by playing Aidan Denham at right back, because it's not worked for Natty Atkinson and Lemba Kisa. But in that game, we're probably going to be playing three at the back against Rangers at Hampden. So maybe not St Mirren yet.
But then when we play three at the back, you can get away with...
Yeah, the issue is not so much...
Wrong.
It's right back in a four.
Aye. I think you go with Sibic in a four.
It's a difficult one because...
You go with Sibic in a four, and then if you go with a three, then it's a toss-up between Natty and Dexter Lembekisa. I think against Rangers, I think Natty's better in one-on-one situations than Lembekisa. I thought Lembekisa showed Kennedy on his strongest foot too often on Saturday. But in terms of going forward, obviously, Lembekisa's maybe got a little bit on Natty in that respect. So it is a bit of a toss-up there. But if it's a back four, and if you know that you've got somebody playing in front of him that can maybe provide the width, then just play Toby there.
Because that's not about getting forward down the right-hand side. That's about securing that position and just keeping it solid, keeping it steady, and not saying to Toby Sibic, right, we need you to bomb up and down. If you're playing right back, you're playing a 4-2-3-1 or you're playing a 4-3-3. So your width's going to come from the other side. And
yeah,
with that width coming
from
the...
There's lots of teams that have done that in the past. I mean, I remember watching Spurs under Conte, and what Spurs used to do under Conte was they would normally play Ben Davis at left back, but again, it was pretty much as a third centre half.
Yes.
And what they would say to Serge Aurier or whoever was playing on the right, they would basically say, right, you're basically a right wing back or even a right sided midfielder, because they knew that they were going to have that cover to have free playing across the back whenever the right back decided to bomb forward. So you could easily do the same with Cochrane playing on the left, mm-hmm. and just ask Toby Sibic to just sort of slide in there as like a third centre half if need be.
I just think it offers you more protection. If you do lose the ball, say Cochrane goes forward and loses the ball, you are kind of playing, I mean, we speak about formations, 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1, 3-5-2. Ultimately, you see the average positions these days, and there's usually one side that one player is further forward. So, yeah, against St Mirren, is that something that we work on? Right now, either Atkinson or Lembekisa is not working as a right back. Did we get away with it against Killy? Well, you could argue not really. So that we need a solution. That's the bottom line. Not for the game against St Mirren, but for the games still to come, because neither of them are cutting it.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the second half, Kilmarnock got the equaliser in the 67th minute. It was great interplay between Marley Watkins and Kyle Bissell. Watkins then curls a fantastic effort, to be fair, into the top right corner. It was quite similar to Josh Ginnelly in terms of position that he scored against Aberdeen last season. I don't think it's as good as Josh Ginnelly's goal, but it was similar ilk, kind of left side of the box, outside the area, and just whipping it away from the goalkeeper into the top right corner. And from that point in, you know, we talk about momentum. It did feel like if someone was going to win it, it might possibly be Kilmarnock. I thought a draw was about right, all in terms of the game. But we did look a bit shaky at the back in the second half, which was a bit of a concern. And Shankland was quiet again. I know he set up the goal in a fantastic manner. I'm going to go to some messages we got about the game post-match and just pick up on some of these comments. Sydney Devine says, wanted to win, but a draw was not the end of the world. Midfield changes needed to be made much earlier, as we had totally dropped out of the game. Still fairly positive, but need to find a bit of form in the next two games leading into the semi-final. Killie match was frustrating, says Alistair Dobby. Played well for the first half, but with Killie's mountainous back four, we weren't clever enough. A point was a deserved result. As for St Mirren, it's my first Hearts game since Istanbul and first game in Scotland since December 2019. We'd better bloody win. Graham Taylor says, given the point in the season, it wasn't a bad point, and I thought it was an enjoyable game overall, and that we played well, in particular in the first half. Psychologically, we could do with a couple of good results before the semi. Thought the atmosphere was fantastic, akin to a much bigger game. Jordan Sterling says, thought we played well for most of the game, was getting worried just before half time, felt we were hanging on a bit and couldn't see it getting any easier in the second, as was proven unfortunately. Great goal by Killie, that I feel, other than the build up, couldn't have been prevented. A few people mentioned Shanklin. Just looked here. Ross Brown said, Shanklin is trying to do too much. He was picking the ball up in our own half or out in the wings, playing balls into the box when he should be the one in there. We're also paying the price for having only one out-and-out striker, because no decent replacements to sub on for Shanklin. John says, thought too much play had to go through Shanklin, even when he's not at his brilliant best. Is that a bit of an issue for either of you guys in terms of games like this? Shanklin, he is good at this, getting involved in and, you know, creating from deep. And we saw it, he set up the goal, but at times, are we over reliant on him to the point where it's not quite Snodgrass esque in us going through one option? But you could see Kilmarnock, how they set up, made it very difficult us to find some kind of alternative, didn't we? We were kind of looking to Shanklin to create something, but then he's the most potent player that we want in that area when the ball comes. And I find it a tough one, because he was nullified a bit, but at the same time, I don't feel like you watch the game and go, you know, Shanklin's not playing well.
Yeah, I think it's harsh to say he's doing too much, because I think he's being asked to perform that role. I think he's being asked to come deep. I don't think he's doing that off his own back. I think that with Forrest and Vargas in the team, I think they're quite keen, particularly with Vargas. They tried to do this a couple of times on Saturday, where Kent tried to play that long ball sort of over the top for Vargas to run onto. So I do think it is a conscious decision by Naismith to have Shanklin drop deep and sort of try and link the play. And again, this points to the work that we've already done with regards to transfer activity for the summer. I think Stephen Naismith is well aware as to where we're struggling, and we're struggling in that sort of advanced midfield position. And I think that's why we're looking at the likes of Blair Spittle and Jan Danda to come in. And again, if they were to come in, there's maybe less of a need for Shanklin to drop as deep as he has been this season. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things that I took a positive out of from Saturday is that I saw plenty of bodies in the box when we were going forward. Now, it can be argued that the decision-making in the final ball was a letdown on many occasions, and it was. But I think, in some respects, I came out of that game with more positives than, for example, some of the 1-0 wins that we've had at home this season against, you know, St Johnstone, or even the 2-0 against Motherwell a few weeks ago, because I can see now some of the variations in play that we want to do from midfield up. You could see the runs that Macaulay Tate was making. Now, unfortunately, I don't think some of the other team were on the same wavelength as him, and he wasn't getting picked, he wasn't getting passed to by some of his teammates, but the runs were there. You could see the likes of Forrest, Grant, Vargas and that getting into good positions as well. Again, the quality needs to come with it, but I think Naismith is slowly starting to build, you know, something in terms of that attack in third. And we've needed that, because let's be brutally you know, honest about this. We're third this season because Lauren Shankland has outperformed any sort of metric that you would expect from a forward out with the Old Firm. So yeah, we've been quite fortunate in that respect. We haven't had a lot of attacking threat coming from other places. Vargas is, you know, this calendar year starting to contribute more as well. So I think long term, there's a lot to take positives from on Saturday. Yep, we want our home record against Kilmarnock to start getting better at some stage. You know, I think somebody was saying it's maybe 20% of our last 20 home games or something against Kilmarnock we've won. It's a
4 out of 20.
Yeah, a really shocking stat like that. So yeah, there's definitely a lot that we can improve on. But I do think there was an aspect to our play that can offer positives for next season, especially, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point. With regards to Lauren Shankland, because he was doing so much in other areas, it was more noticeable. It was a bit of an anomaly in that he's done that this season. Of course he have. We saw the goal against Airdrie when he started it inside his own half and then finished it off. But I thought for the first half hour or so, guys like George Grant and Macaulay Tay and Alan Forrest, although he didn't have much on the ball, Forrest, I thought they were all working pretty hard. But then it became a bit panic mode. Kelly had a good side. And I don't like this. You look at guys like Mayo and Dees and Polworth and Donnelly, and you think, oh, if they passed me in the street, I wouldn't know who they were. Yeah, that's on you. That's on me. That's just a lack of respect for the opposition. They are where they are because they're a bloody well-coached side by Derek McInnes. Now, they had the better of the second half. And even before that, we saw Lauren Shankland get into positions that we haven't seen him in very often, deeper and trying to start moves. And that's not great as far as you remember when Liam Boyce got hurt. That kind of happened around that time, the first few games after that. And that he was expending too much energy trying to do that. You want to make sure he's fresh for doing what he's good at. As far as the other things are concerned with Lauren Shankland, he just needs a goal. He's not someone that's going to sulk or anything like that. Maybe he's trying too hard, but he went through a drought, did he not? At the start of the, not the start of the season, but maybe October time, October, November time, and then back up and running. So no issues whatsoever. It's just because he's scoring every week. When he doesn't, and he does something a little bit different, it stands out.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to remember that Kilmarnock have only lost two of the last 16 games now in the league. Both of those defeats were to Rangers. So that's basically since Hearts won away to Kilmarnock at the start of December, only Rangers have beaten them in the league, which is pretty good going. And they're not a bad side. They, you know, they wouldn't be a bad side if they're sitting fourth in the table. So it's not the end of the world. I think what a few people mentioned there and what we spoke about after the game, it's just momentum, isn't it? You know, it doesn't really affect us too much in the league. We're still 10 points clear of Kilmarnock. We should, even after the capitulation last season. Don't want to say we will, but we should finish third, even if we don't pick up an awful lot in terms of form. But the problem is we've got a big semi-final coming up, and that's what our season is now going to hinge on in terms of how productive it is from now to the end of the campaign.
Momentum. I know you want to move on. Momentum is the key word here. We're 1-1-5 right now. If we keep doing what we're doing right now, which isn't really working. Certainly at Tynecastle, the Hibs game and the Kilmarnock game and then the thumping at Ibrox and the disappointment at Ross County. Do you keep doing that and hope for a different outcome against St Mirren? Or do you maybe make one or two changes?
We will talk about that when we get on to St Mirren against Hearts, which is the next game for the men in maroon. But for now, we'll move on.
Forrest Hepburn and MacDonald have been making creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. For more, visit fhmcdsigns.co.uk.
Okay, next up, let's take a little break from what's going on in terms of on-the-field stuff for Hearts right this moment. And we're going to talk about Hearts signing players from other Scottish clubs. This came up when we were chatting about the recent free contract signings Hearts have made. Of course, Jan Danda previously, and then more recently, Blair Spittle and James Penrice. So it got us kind of thinking about other signings we've made from Scottish clubs. And I put this out on Twitter just to get people's feedback on kind of best and worst signings from other Scottish clubs. Many people missed the kind of memo on this. We got a few random suggestions, but a lot of people did understand the homework set out. And we'll go through some of these now, and we'll have a wee chat, and we'll maybe get some thoughts from Mark and Scott as well. First up, well, here's one. So Jambo Ryan says, I've not seen it mentioned, but does Big Xander Clark count? Was technically a free agent, but his previous club was Saints. I'll allow someone who signed as a free agent and their last club is a Scottish club, because it sometimes can depend on, oh, was it a pre-contract? Did he sign a week after? Was it a month? So I think we'll allow that. If their last team was a Scottish club, we'll make that count. Fair. And I think Xander Clark has been a good signing. I think Saturday showed that. And, you know, we've had the debates on here about whether it's Xander Clark or Craig Gordon, but you've got a discussion between two very good players in one position. It would be, you know, if we had a similar discussion about who else could play in Lawrence Shanklin's position, it would be a nice problem to have. But right now we're relying on one. But I think Xander Clark's been a good signing, and I thought he was excellent on Saturday again.
Yeah, no complaints. Certainly the save just before half time was outstanding. If you're saying could he have done better at the goal, I would point to Nick Salembakisa and say prior to Marley Watkins coming inside, Lembakisa's position is wrong and it's not great. But yeah, the fact that he signed a 3-year deal and he'll be the eventual number one when Craig eventually hangs up his gloves, no problem whatsoever with that.
Beg Bissett says, in 1 week, Jim Jeffrey's got Neil McCann, Colin Cameron and David Weir.
I remember that.
From Dundee, Raith and Falkirk respectively. Doing so won him a Scottish Cup. Also signed Fulton, Hamilton, Presley and whilst in crisis, McSwagan and Jackson. Nobody did this better than Jeffrey's. That's a good shout there. You know, I was looking at the 98 final lineup. 12 of the players who played, the 11 who started in the one sub, at least 6 were signed from other Scottish clubs. 7, if you count Stephen Naismith arriving from Whitehall Welfare just before he broke into the first team. But yeah. Yes, certainly. I mean, it's maybe an era where at that point there wasn't as many foreign signings, but certainly some clever business there.
Yeah, I think so. So the Bosman ruling came in, that would have been, what, 96? I want to say 95, 96. And I think the biggest impact on our ability to sign players for Scotland has been the sort of wealth or the embarrassment of riches that even sort of Championship teams and League One teams can now afford down south. So that, you know, if you go back 20, 30 years, a Colin Cameron or a Neil McCann would look at Hearts as being their next step up from Dundee and Raith Rovers, whereas now people of that ilk in that position, there's every chance that they'll go top-end League One or potentially a Championship team. So that's probably had one of the most detrimental impacts on our ability to sort of, you know, sign players from other Scottish sides. Naturally, pre-contracts are a little bit different. We've seen that this summer. You saw the summer of 2011 when we brought in 4 players from Premiership clubs as well. But really, you know, the last sort of 15, 20 years, it hasn't been quite as prevalent as it used to be. And with regards to the ones you mentioned there with McCann and that, it wasn't so much. So they weren't all in the same week. So from what I can remember, it was Weir, McCann, and actually Jeremy Goss that was signed in the same week during that summer. Colin Cameron was a couple of months before. He came in towards the tail end of the 95-96 season.
Or late end of season, because he didn't have the transfer windows yet, did they? So it was like a strange time, I think.
So he came in end of March, start of April. But if you look at that calendar year, we signed Cameron first quarter of the year. We then got McCann and Weir during the summer. And then we signed Jim Hamilton before the end of the year as well in December. So in terms of, like you say, that 98 squad, you know, there was like 4 key parts to that. They're all signing in the one calendar year.
Yeah, I'll have a look at some other messages. Flitch also said 96 with a good year for signing players. He mentions Cameron, Weir, McCann. Also says Craig Levein for 40,000 in 83, a total steal. Dennis Wyness tried like hell but couldn't really cope as a Hearts player. Heard that phrase before. Grant Young said Craig Levein from Kenilworth as well. Also mentioned Andy Webster from Arbroath and Paul Hartley from St Johnston. Stevie Morris says, Craig Levein at the end of 83, he was 19 and already had a Rolls-Royce engine, head and shoulders above guys in their prime. So there's another one. You know, Craig Levein, an absolutely incredible player, signed from Cowdenbeath, and although it's a very different era to some of the ones we've mentioned, and it's still a market that we've seen some decent acquisitions from, isn't it? Those the lower leagues, you know, Andy Webster there is mentioned from Arbroath. I think we'll get on to Ryan Stevenson's mentioned later on. So we've made a few good acquisitions from teams below the top tier as well.
I really like the Sacked in the Morning podcast on BBC. Craig Levein's on it, and he's spoken a lot about how he played junior football. That really helped him when he was at Cowdenbeath, or just before he went to Cowdenbeath. It helped him kind of playing against men with the step up to Hearts, because he could do more of the things that he enjoyed doing, passing the ball, getting forward, because he was a luxury defender. He was a Rolls-Royce defender, but he learned how to handle himself in junior football. It's to do with the gap between the top of the Championship and the bottom of the Premier League. It's like, oh, we've signed a Championship player. Yeah, but I don't think there's much of a gap. I mean, right now, would you trust Livingston to do anything against Dundee United or against Raith Rovers? I know they did all right against Partick in the Cup, but we've just signed up. We've signed one of Livingston's better players, James Penrice. So I don't think we can turn our nose up at someone from the Championship if they're like head and shoulders above the rest of the players in the league. And Andy Webster was what, 75 grand from Arbroath?
Around that, yeah.
I don't think he would have been the player that he ended up being without Stephen Presley at the football club to help him along. So it's all right going and casting your net far and wide, but you've got to have a plan in place. And when he was signed, he obviously thought, right, Elvis, arm around him, let's make him better. And by God, he did.
Matthew Harold says, Ryan Stevenson exceeded my expectations by miles. Neil McFarlane as well. I thought Ramon Pereira was going to score 20 plus goals because of that hair. Ian Cameron said, I'd like to comment on how awful Connor Salmon was, but of course we didn't sign him from a Scottish club. I think an honourable mention is due to Neil McFarlane, a no-frills player who tidied up and recycled innumerable second balls, helping knit the midfield together. That's a couple of mentions there for Neil McFarlane, someone at I had a lot of time for, and I think that position is getting it's maybe not quite quite popular, you would say, but it's certainly recognized more, isn't it? The no nonsense recycling of possession, the holding midfielder position, which maybe it wasn't as much 20 years ago or so when he signed for Hearts.
Scotty, when you were growing up, did you dream of being a defensive midfielder?
No, I was always a centre half by trade when I was boys club football. So yeah, I mean midfield, they were just known as midfielders, you know. Like to me, when I was younger, John Miller, Derek Ferguson, Gary Mackay,
it's Makalele, wasn't he? Changed.
Yeah, there was never a six or an eight or a
Paul Lambert.
It was just they all done the same thing to the sort of untrained eye, didn't they?
Look at Paul Lambert winning the European Cup with Borussia Dortmund. Motherwell, yeah. He was a more advanced player, but. I think it was Otmar Hitzfeld at the time thought, you know what, this kid's got a football brain on him. He can be the conductor of the orchestra. He can be the guy we give the ball to, the libero, and make things happen. And yeah, it's kind of taken off. And Makalele, John Obi Mikel, look at the two boys that Chelsea have spent a couple hundred million on. That hasn't really worked, Moises Caicedo and Enzo. But it's just, it's got ridiculous now.
Let's see what else we've got. HM Foxtrot Charlie says Sutton and Whiting were the biggest disappointment. Joel Sked says not the worst but one of the most disappointing. John Sutton hit double figures in his previous four top flight campaigns at St Mirren and Motherwell before joining, scored 12 league goals with us, went back to Motherwell and scored 22, then 12, because of course he did. And that is one, isn't it? I think John Sutton was one of those signings that I really liked. I thought it was a clever one, but I think the kind of mitigating circumstances here is the change of manager, isn't it? Partly. I think it might
partly,
have been might have been a bit different for John Sutton if Jim Jeffries had stuck around.
Possibly. He was a victim of circumstance, although I'm not quite sure Jeffries sticking around would have helped either. I think one of the biggest issues with John Sutton was he was a classic number nine. he would score goals inside the six-yard box. But at Motherwell, he was playing in a system, I think, from what I can recall, it was like a sort of 4-3-3 system that they had at the time. I'm pretty sure Lionel...
They had that really... Ainsworth. What was the... Was it Humphreys?
Humphreys really fast, and Ainsworth, from yeah. what I can recall, was their two wide players.
Just and whipping I think balls in the box.
Hearts signed them at the time that Kevin Kyle was injured. And I think what happened was fans, and maybe even Jim Jeffries to an extent, saw him as a bit of a backs to the, you know, back to goal type centre forward, which he never really was.
Yeah.
So I think there was a little bit of that at play. Sergio came in, he wanted his own type of player as well. Second season, he wasn't too bad, you know, playing under McGlynn. I think McGlynn understood how to get something out of him. But the team were generally struggling for creativity that year. So yeah, he was, I always feel like, you know, victim of circumstance with John Sutton more than anything else.
Fraser Elgin says, towel for me. So Medi Towel, it's one thing buying crap players, but it's another thing buying good players who constantly underachieve. Mike Monteith said he certainly wasn't the worst, but I had high hopes for Gavin Riley and it didn't quite materialise. Steve McLean was an odd one. Suter, surely the best of this era, which is a pretty fair shout. Alistair Dobby says a lot of the great and crap ones have been mentioned. I was disappointed in Stephen Boyack, hoped for a lot more from him. David Hagan, another example like that. And Craig Nelson still gives me the fear to this day. Northamptonshire Hearts says John Miller exceeded expectations under the radar signing, but scored some important goals from midfield. Danny Granger falls into this category too. Dennis Wyness was a huge disappointment. He didn't lack effort, but the move just didn't work out for him. He's one, another one I really like, the sign of Dennis Wyness, prolific at Inverness. And it was just a prime example of someone who just couldn't quite make that step up, even though he'd been playing at that same level in terms of Inverness. He'd done it in the top flight with Inverness, but stepping up to play for Hearts was just a big bit too far for him, wasn't it?
It was. John Miller doesn't count, by the way. He was signed from Blackburn.
Yes.
Yes, good. I wasn't sure if, because you've been going on about rules.
Sorry, I'm reeling off some of the messages here. I'm not checking everyone. John Miller's just a little before my time, so that one slipped under the radar.
Loved him.
Thank you. Thank you for highlighting.
Yes. Loved them. You can tell the kind of generation of the names that have been given, those that are slightly older and those that are slightly younger. I think some of the biggest success stories that haven't been mentioned, because we can go over the ones that have again, that's pointless. John Cahoon from Celtic was a brilliant, brilliant bit of business. So it was Tosh McKinley. We got him from Dundee. Dave McPherson gets two entries because we signed him twice from Rangers. And then Andy Webster. And to get Craig Gordon on a free, and the way he's performed is just incredible. From a disappointment perspective, Brian Hamilton, I think he's been mentioned, Dennis Wyness, Stephen Boyack, Jake Mulraney, Colin Cram. It's maybe harsh, and I haven't put failures, I've put disappointments, because we signed Colin Cram from Hamilton. But again, you sign him from Hamilton, I don't know what the success failure percentage is, but you're never, if you can get 50%, I think you're doing all right. So you're going to get some that don't really make it. He certainly did well at Hamilton, Colin Cram, but some find the step up easy, like water off a duck's back, and others struggle. A lot of it's to do with the mentality of the player, never mind the ability.
Yeah,
Colin Cram's
that.
A funny one, because it was actually Jim Jeffries, it was actually Falkirk we got him from. It was in a swap deal for Mo Johnston. So Jeffries punted Cram to us in like March or April of that year. And then Jeffries then came and joined Hearts literally in that summer. So it was just never gonna happen for him. He actually ended up doing okay down south though.
Yeah, he was all right. Just didn't work at Hearts. I mean, it's fine. It happens.
Yeah, I was going to say, just on Dennis Wyness, he did play top flight for Inverness, but it was after Hearts, so second spell. But it was just someone, it just suited him at Inverness. Kenny Hunter, I like this one. Mahe was one that exceeded expectations.
Oh, yes.
Was not impressed when he signed, but he was excellent. I was similar to that. I thought we're signing a player who was all right for Celtic and is now past it. But I thought Stefan Mahe was fantastic. I loved him over the two seasons he played for us. Still had the right engine on him, despite being at the kind of latter stage of his career.
Yeah, there was a time we could do business with the old firm, wasn't there? Like, it's funny, some of the ones Mark mentioned about John Colquhoun and Dave McPherson, but You know, we got Sandy Clark from Rangers for 30 grand. We signed Brian Whitaker and Roddy McDonald for Celtic. Antti Niemi we got for Rangers for a snip as well. So there's, you know, there was a time that you could do a bit of business with the Old Firm. I feel like those days are well and truly gone. Not so much just from transfer fee, but I think just a wage disparity as well. You know, obviously we got Andy Halliday, but it was when his contract had already expired and he'd been a free agent for a couple of months. So I kind of feel like unless you're getting someone who's starting to enter the sort of downward trajectory of their career, it's going to be very difficult to sort of do business with those sorts of clubs now.
We signed Davy Kirkwood. He was involved with one of the deals with Dave McPherson. And again, he was young. He'd been on loan at East Fife. We signed him from Rangers. And you've been on loan at East Fife, and then you come to Hearts. I think Rangers were perfectly happy to include him as part of the deal. And yeah, it didn't work. And then he came back to bite us on the arse when he signed for Airdrie.
Let's have a look what else we got quickly. Gaz said, Paul Hartley, Neil McCann, Steve Fulton, Colin Cameron and Antti Niemi are the best player we've signed from other Scottish clubs, in my opinion. Wyness, Twaddle and James, I thought, would do a better job than they did. All honest pros. I just thought they'd have more of an impact. Big G says some of the best. Neil McCann, Steve Fulton, Paul Hartley, Colin Cameron. Worst, Mihai Popescu. Brought him in from St Mirren. Jake Mulroney, Dennis Wyness, John Sutton. Sure, there's tons more. Special mention to Craig Whiten for taking a penalty, like my nan in the Scottish Cup final against Celtic. Wow. And Keith E.D. says, showing my age here, but Jeremy Goss was a huge disappointment. He's done well in England, scoring some spectacular goals, but was constantly injured and never fit.
How do you top scoring in the Olympia Stadion for Norwich against Bayern? I mean, come on. That was one of those.
One thing I thought was interesting about this, so I was looking back just to try and remind myself of some other players that we signed from Scottish clubs. And interestingly, now, they talk about, what do they often say now, that if you've got a 50-50 hit rate on your signings, it's actually all right. You know, they say it's the hardest thing in football is recruitment. If you get 50-50, as in for every good player you sign a bad player, that's actually okay. If you get more than that, you're doing well. I have to say, when I was looking back through players we've signed from Scottish clubs, it was harder to find bad signings.
I think we're more than 50%. I think so.
And I'm not talking that they're all spectacular signings. But no. So here's an example. I got back to about 95, 96. I thought when you get before that time, pretty much, you know, almost all the transfers are within Scotland. There might be some missed off this list. I pulled it off a website. I skipped some that didn't look like they ever actually played for the first team. But so you got Alan Lawrence, Paul Smith, David Weir, Colin Cameron, Stephen Frail, Neil McCann, Roddy McKenzie, Gary Naismith, Robbie Nielsen, Jim Hamilton, Jose Kitongo, Stephen Presley, Gary McSwagan, Darren Jackson, Kevin James, Gary Wales, Antti Niemi, Gordon Jury, Stephen Boyack, Austin McCann, Andy Webster, Stefan Mahe, Kevin Twaddle, Neil McFarlane, Dennis Wyness, Paul Hartley, Jamie McAllister, David Templeton, Mark Ridgers, Michael Stewart, Gordon Smith, Ian Black, Ryan Stevenson, Kevin Kyle, Darren Barr, Andy Webster, Jamie Hamill, John Sutton, Mehdi Taul, Danny Granger, Jack Hamilton, Peter Enkelman, Morgado Gomez, James Keating, Scott Gallagher, Lee Hollis, Gavin Riley, John Suter, Robbie Muirhead. There's a bit of a period here where we have a dip. Leonard Sova, Dylan BK, Ross Callaghan, Stephen McLean, Ryan Edwards, Jake Mulroney, Craig Whiten, Craig Halkett, Craig Gordon, Andy Halliday, Ross Stewart, Alan Forrest, Lewis Nielsen, Xander Clark. And that's not bad. And I know I just reeled off a giant list there, but when you think
of the end was more poo than the beginning. The beginning was mostly, yeah.
Yeah, there was a little bit in middle to the last third that there was some downwards. But in terms of, like, obviously you should have seen some of the transfer windows, and there was about 10 plus names in there, and almost every one I was like, I think there's a lot to be said for doing more of this business. And I think you alluded to it a little bit more for earlier, Mark, when you see a player and sometimes there's a little, turn your nose up at, you've signed Blair Spittle or James Penrice, we've signed a player from Motherwell or from Livingston, but then we sign as someone who's, you know, from, I'm trying to name a country so it doesn't look like I'm referencing someone in particular, but you know, you sign someone from a different market, from the Asian market, for from Eastern European market or something like that, and people get more excited about it. But sometimes we're overlooking players who are proven at the level that we want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've said that. One of the players that you mentioned, which I hadn't forgot about, but as far as this list is concerned, I kind of sat up and thought, oh yeah, like we spent 130 grand on Stephen Frail. And we'd already spent money on Tosh McKinley years before from Dundee. We seemed to have a decent enough record. I liked Stephen Frail. I thought he was a good player. The one I wanted to ask you both about is obviously a player now. Well, he's no longer a player. He's someone we hear most weeks, either on radio or television. He had a loan spell from Manchester United. Then he went to Hibs, and then he came back to Hearts. What about Michael Stewart? What did we make of his permanent move from Hibernian from 2007 to 2010? How should he be remembered as a Hearts player second time around?
The problem is, I'll let Scott do a better analysis than I will. I think the problem is some of the moments and
Dundee United red card.
His temperament, you know, his silly sending offs, falling out with fans. I think he's one of these, if you took away all the controversy, for me, he would, you know, I don't think he was a spectacular Hearts player. I think there was a lot expected of him because the level he'd come from initially playing for Manchester United. I thought he was had some very good spells with Hearts, and I thought overall he would have been deemed fine if it wasn't for some of his antics. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, I would agree. I actually think Michael Stewart was actually a very good midfielder. He had two really good spells at Hearts at the start of the 07-08 season and then the following 08-09 season when Laszlo came in. He was actually touted for Scotland call-ups, and he did actually get a friendly appearance against Northern Ireland and one of them. So, look, it's always quite easy to dismiss Michael Stewart because whenever you discuss his name, the things that spring immediately to mind are generally the red cards or the issues with other players, and everyone knows it was well documented that he fell out with Jeffries and Billy Brown, Gary Locke, and that when they came in as well in 2010. So that always seems to be the go-to. But in fact, he was actually a really good midfielder. I think there was times where other players weren't on the same wavelength as him. I think there was also occasions where he tried to do too much. You know, he was always the first guy to be charging down the goalkeeper, bringing himself out of position. And I think discipline, both, you know, in those moments and also in terms of the red cards are what ultimately, you know, let him down. But he was a really good player on the ball. Sometimes it's hard to weigh up whether someone's successful because sometimes you've got to weigh up their contribution against maybe salary, maybe expectations, and sometimes certain players then they don't come off as well when you start to weigh up in that sense. But you know, on paper as a footballer, he was definitely a decent enough player.
So hopefully we have some more strong signings from Scottish clubs imminently arriving.
I was going to say just before, because I wanted to highlight this one as probably one of the most important bits of business that we've done with a Scottish club, is probably David Templeton. Like, it was 35 grand, I think it was, for Stenhouse Muir. And if you think about moments that he gave us at Easter Road at Anfield and then the money he made us in 2012, I think that's possibly one of the most important bits of business we've done in the last 20 years.
Yeah. No, that's fair. And there was a few that weren't immediately on the list. As I say, I kind of gave a skim through on transfers then. I think some were filtered out. But no, that is a very fair point. I think it was more just the overall feeling that actually looking back, even a sample size of what, a quarter of a century pretty much, I would say we've got more hits, and maybe a strong word, but more positive than negative from our signings from fellow Scottish clubs, I would say. And I think if you weighed that up, fair enough, when you look at other markets, you'd probably say we've had some big hits in there, you know, some, you know, your Rudy Scatchells, etc. But I would say we've had a lot more big misses when we've looked elsewhere. And some of them are big misses who also cost us significantly more than if we were dipping into local markets as well. So thank you to everyone for tuning in. Not quite at the end, for messaging, for getting in touch with all those. I really appreciate it. And we'll move on. You're listening to Scarves Around the Funnel, sponsored by Forest Hepburn and McDonald Signs, Creative Sign and Print Solutions since the 1950s. We're almost at the end of this week's episode, but before we go, we will talk about St Mirren against Heart of Midlothian this coming Saturday. Last time these sides met, Lawrence Shanklin got a double, and that was at Tynecastle just before Christmas in a 2-0 Hearts win. Hearts lost their last visit to Paisley, though. That was 1-0. Could have actually been a lot worse in that game. It was a very poor performance from the men in maroon, but they're now without a win in 3 visits to this ground. Won both games there in 21-22, but 3 visits without a victory. Hearts sitting in 3rd, 10 clear of Kilmarnock with 7 games to go. Saints in 5th, 2 behind Killie, 4 ahead of Dundee, but Dundee do have that game in hand against Rangers. So, St Mirren going into the game, 1 win in the last 4, 2 of the last 6, but they are good at home. Only Rangers or Celtic have won in Paisley in 2024. Won 3 of the last 4 home games against Dundee, St Johnstone and Aberdeen. Hearts without a win in 2, but just 2 defeats in 18. 8 out of the last 10 games have ended in Hearts victories, albeit they have lost 2 of the last 3 on the road. Mark Donaldson, what are you envisaging for this one?
Thought we were dreadful there in September. And if I remember rightly, you commentated on the game. Did Lauren Shanklin not have a similar chance in that game, which he missed, than he had in a previous game against St Mirren that he scored, or something happened towards the end for Lauren Shanklin of that game, the most recent one? So I think this is a tough one. We don't really have momentum right now. I think this is going to be a draw. I think this is a tough one. If I'm offered 4 points right now from the last 2 games, would I take it? I don't know, because the expectation is that you're going to get 3, hopefully, against Livingston, the final game before the split. And I think 3 would pretty much wrap it up. Just by the way, the Kilmarnock game, now we can look at it, we can say it was more of a not-lose game than a must-win game, as far as an 8-point gap, single digits and everything like that. So I think this is tough. We need to start playing well at St Mirren, because we haven't really played well for a fair bit of time, probably the last 3 or 4 visits since we won there in February 22.
Scott, you've spoken recently about Hearts not needing to get results in games as much as their opponents, and that showing sometimes in terms of their need being greater than ours. Do you feel this could be a similar example, with St Mirren looking pretty safe in top 6, but a lot of teams around them in those European places are still very much up for grabs?
Yeah, I'm expecting this game to be more of a cagey affair than what we've just witnessed against Kilmarnock at the weekend. I felt that the way that they set up and we set up meant that it did go a bit more end-to-end. I do have a funny feeling that we'll go back to a 3. I think given the problems that Lembekisa and Atkinson have had in a 4 recently, I think they'll go back to a 3. I think there's every chance that Kai Rowles comes back into the team as well. So because of that, and because of St Mirren's struggles and front of goal, generally speaking, I think this is going to be quite a tight match. But it is a tight match that I can see us coming away with the 3 points in as well, albeit it might be, you know, nicking a 1-0.
We have done better away from home at times this season. Mark, are you feeling optimistic enough to go for a Hearts victory in this one then?
No, I'm not. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. We have to match their energy, and we have to match their fighting spirit, and the way that they battle, and he'll have them totally wound up for this. They can't run over the top of us. I felt they did that back in September. I thought we were very timid, and I hope we've learned our lesson. I know it's a Hearts podcast, but I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw in this one, and Vargas to keep his scoring streak going.
Okay, you've gone for the same as what I'm going for, which is also 1-1. I feel how you've described it is pretty accurate. I'll mix it up with the goal scorers, though. I reckon they're going to nullify Shanklin again. Hope I'm wrong, but they'll have a lot of focus on Shanklin. But they will be a bit foul heavy, So I feel they're going to give us some set piece opportunities. Mr. Stephen Kingsley will step up and deliver. So 1-1 with Kingsley on the score sheet.
Hold on. Where's Shankland when Kingsley delivers? Is Shankland in an offside position, or is he getting out of the way this time?
He wins the free kick and this time makes sure he's standing clearly onside.
Okay, glad you cleared that up.
Scott, how about you?
I'm going to go 1-0, and I do think it'll be Lauren Shankland that'll nick it for us.
Nice. Well, I hope you are right and both Mark and I are wrong. But we shall see next week when we're back on. Now, if you want to get in touch in the meantime, then please feel free if you want to message
music.
Any of the... What's that?
Music, the homework we gave earlier. What songs do you associate with going to the
Football? We've probably done it like 3 times now. We're getting senile, but yeah, why not? If songs that you associate with Hearts or songs...
Oh, okay, songs that you hate because they're not associated with Hearts, they're associated with something that gives you a bad memory. Let's go down that road. If we've done the songs... Let's go down songs that have been ruined. The Depeche Mode one for Scotty.
Why not? I mean, we've probably done it before, but I just can't get enough of this topic.
Have.
So.
Irish Rover by the Pogues.
Let us know. Tweet at Around the Funnel. Email podcast@scarvesaroundthefunnel.co.uk. Good luck to the men and women this weekend. Hopefully we're back to winning ways. Whatever happens, we will be back next week to discuss it. Until then, thanks for tuning in.
All I ever needed is here in my